Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance need the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horde with you. And what's happening, everybody? Well, you know, again, we've seen some, you know, whippy action, some wild action. And, of course, we now have the jobs number coming out this week, you know, so that might create some excitement. But I guess the real question is, are we really seeing the job growth that they're telling us that we're seeing? And actually, I think not. You know, again, there's a lot of numbers that can be played with. But I think when you just look at it from a pure, easy and simple standpoint, I don't think that you're getting I don't think we're getting any farther ahead. I think that that creates another bigger issue here that again, this is more of a kick the can down the road. And unfortunately, we can't seem to get away from it. We keep shying away from the debt issue. And of course, that's, you know, I've said all week that this was the black swan event, I think, is going to be part of it. You know, when you look at the viewpoint of where we stand, you know, it's going to end up being debt that's going to bust us out, I think. That's only a short term thing, right? I believe in America. I think the markets are going to be great. Over time, they're going to continue to do at their pace of 8% year over year. However, they are A, due for a correction, and B, we're creating such a mess, and C, the Fed has totally lost their mind and lost control, and I don't think has any idea of what's going on. And I think that's the problem when you work off of a theory and you work off of hoping and praying as a system. And, you know, they continue to talk. We heard their minutes last week, and they were ridiculous. And to me, it's just, you know, we're being led around by a bunch of, you know, people that have no idea what the real world is all about. But we saw, you know, some action, and you're getting these. Remember, tops are not the markets don't announce themselves. And we see a potential top here. Now, again, just because we see the top does not mean that the markets are going to turn around and go lower right now. It just means I don't think they're going to go up, you know. But, you know, there's different patterns in the market, and they go up, down, or sideways. And I think we're going to go sideways to down. Now, you'll get these big, you know, rallies that will be, should be meant to be sold. But we've got too many, you know, there's so many things being manipulated at one time here that it's kind of scary, right? If you look at the oil markets, right? Oil is being manipulated to be higher, you know, mostly by OPEC or the attempt of OPEC. But, you know, when you look at the formation, we've talked about this backwardation. That is not something that you'd look for to be thinking that oil was going to be strong. And that's an issue that says, oh, that's not very good. Because, again, if December oil is much cheaper than April oil, that's not the way it should be. You would think that there'd be a premium to later oil. But that's a manipulated product right now. Then you've got interest rates that they're trying to manipulate. Now, they can no longer do it through the bond market. As we said for quite a while, the bond market has taken control. And they said, screw you. We're not interested anymore. So bonds have melted down. I mean, bonds are now gone from the 38-year bull market into a bear market. So, you know, you've got rates climbing. You've got the 10-year is going to probably hit 3% in the next week or two. In my opinion, I think that's something that is important to understand. I think the other thing is you've got, you know, existing home sales, the lowest since 1999. What does that mean in the big picture? Well, it means is that people don't have any money. It means that they can't buy. You know, we've got too many things going on here. And I think that is something that is really interesting. Because we ignore it. It's like we continue to brush over news like it's never going to change. And as we know that when the Fed is trying to exit any program in their history, they have never done it well. Now, you know, if you listen to some of the conspiracy theories about, you know, what the Fed's all about, it's not about helping you and me. I mean, think about the massive amounts of debt and we have created and don't care about. Now, do you like having your dollars deflated that actually artificially make your assets look better? I'm going to say this, and I've said it, I think, for the last couple of weeks. Watch the dollar. Right. The dollar is the dollar holds the key. Remember the movie National Treasure? Charlotte holds the key. The dollar holds the key. Okay. The dollar is being pushed down by not only the Fed, but through central banks around the globe, because they don't want to see the dollar take off, because, again, it affects their borrowing as well. You know, we're global markets now. We're global in everything. So the money, a lot of money that's being borrowed from out of the country, they're getting the money cheaper anyways because of the power of their currency. That's what nobody, the dirty little secrets that nobody wants to talk to you about, is that the artificial system of keeping rates artificially low is, if you can't do it with the rates themselves, you do it with the dollar, because then it gives anybody whose currency is greater than the dollar, gives them a discount to the rate through the currency. You know, it's a very tricky business that's out here. And of course, we don't have the benefits of being in the same position with everybody. And I think that the Fed has done, you know, their damage. And it's going to create, I believe, the black swan event, because it's got to come back down to debt. I can't see any other thing. I mean, it's been this debt bubble has been growing basically almost since the last one that burst. But they've actually extended it here because of their gutless views of raising rates. Now, some believe that rates shouldn't be risen, and I think this goes back to, well, you know, many of us believe that, well, that's the way we've always done it. And I go, well, why is the way we've always done it correct? If the way we've always done it is correct, we wouldn't have a $21 trillion deficit. Okay? So, you know, at some point there's going to be a hard line, but what happens is in markets they get a little bit, you know, they start to have to correct themselves, because there is going to be some fear about what's going on, and that should create a bigger potential sell based on those reasons. Because, again, you cannot continue to ignore debt forever. Eventually, it somehow has to be paid back. Now, unfortunately for us, I think that it'll be paid back through the Fed creating more money. Which doesn't really pay it back, but I think that's the other reason you see these cryptocurrencies continue to expand, even though we've had a little selling pressure lately. But the market cap, the market value continues to grow because of all of these reasons. So I think that what you look for here is you look for, you know, a reason. And again, I don't want anybody to just jump out and short arbitrarily the market. I want you to look at it, but I think that, you know, you've got great opportunities at resistance levels to be a seller of the market. And again, it doesn't mean you go out and just sell randomly. You look for key spots, but you also have to remember to have a key exit if you're wrong, because again, there's always going to be decisions that have to be made throughout these markets. There's always going to have to be decisions made about your decision. And what you don't want to do is you don't want to make an emotional decision. So you need to stay calm and observe, but again, put yourself in a position so, you know, when the Dow gets to, you know, to 25.3, that's probably a good sell spot. If it goes over 23.5, you probably should be out. And it's just recognizing the levels and defending and defensing your position and your capital. Because at the end of the day, we don't have the same benefit of the Federal Reserve and the government that we can just continue to print money. So we've got to watch our money and make sure that we take care of it. It's always something to keep in mind, because, again, we don't have that same privilege. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show, and I am Todd Bubba Horowitz. And, of course, I want to remind you to download the show every single day at libertytalk.fm. And don't forget, we got The Sporting Edge with Xander on the weekends, and a brand new show with Matt Demeter, Crypto Investor X. So make sure you download that as well. And don't forget to get Bubba's daily update. You know, every day after the market closes, I do an update. Quick video, and I tell you what I saw and what I think I'm going to see tomorrow. Try to give you tomorrow's newspaper today. And all you have to do to get that is go to bubbatrading.com, and you can check that out. It's free. There's no credit card required. Just fill out the little box, and you'll be all set up and ready to go. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to be right back with Jane King from Lila Max Media after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're coming right back to you. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. It's time for our traveling genius, Jane King from Lila Max Media, the Kaching Report. Jane King, what's up?
Continuing to watch the markets, and you know, they're a roller coaster ride still. It can't quite. This 25,000 has been like a sticking point for the Dow. So we'll see if we can break out from there, one way or the other.
Yeah, I think I do think we'll break out. I do think that, but you and I are on opposite sides of this trade. But it's all good. I mean, again, I think overall things will be good. But so. I know you were in Vermont last week, took the kids for a couple of days, and tell us, I guess, first of all, how was it? Was it fun? And number one, number two, how did the economy look in Vermont?
Well, my kids both, you know, and they've been asking to learn how to snowboard and learn how to ski. And then we started watching the Olympics, and my son watched Red Gerard, 17-year-old, win the gold medal. And he's like all ready to, like, you know, learn to snowboard. So we just, you know, booked a weekend up at Mount Snow, southern Vermont, drove up there. I'll tell you, the ski slopes were packed. It was President's Day weekend, which is the number one or two busiest weekend for ski resorts, but absolutely packed. The lodge just, I mean, no place to sit. So busy. We went to a couple of little tiny towns, and they're just, you know, so charming in Vermont. And they were busy. We went on a sleigh ride pulled by these Belgian draft horses. Three sleighs full, 20 people each. So it seemed like, you know, it was really kind of bustling up there. We drove through Connecticut, Massachusetts on the way to get there. Lots of cars on the road, lots of people out and about. So it looked like things looked pretty good from our perspective in New England.
Now, does it bother you at all the amount of debt that we're creating, not only in the government, but in individuals with credit card debt at record levels and a lot of things underwater, of things that we borrow on and housing sales, you know, existing home sales, the lowest since 1999?
Yeah. Well, I think debt is, to me, the big looming cloud over everything that's going on. I mean, we just, as individuals, and we watch the government do it, you know, when we need more money, we just, you know, go into debt. We sell bonds. You know, I think it's highly irresponsible. I can't believe that we can't look at the government. And even, you know, just trying to, like, restructure things. I mean, we know entitlement programs are the biggest thing that we're spending money on. And those are going to be the budget busters, and they may be the things that bring us down. There's surely a way we can make those more efficient and leaner. I don't know if it's through using technology, and if it's reevaluating the entire program. But this is a huge concern for me. Credit card debt, I did see a Bankrate study that says that people are saving more. So 58% of Americans now have more in savings than they do in credit card debt. So I haven't seen anything like that in a long time. So I thought that was pretty encouraging. The student loan debt, it just seems like we have, since the 80s, really dysfunctioned on debt is just part of the equation. I mean, there's income and then there's debt, and we use them both to kind of get by. And if we start seeing these interest rates really go up higher, that's going to be very painful.
Yeah, so now, you know, we've got the 10-year at 2.9 and the 30-year at 3.21. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, the only thing that's helping us right now, I think, is the cheaper dollar, which I think is being pushed down by central banks and by the Fed. But I don't think that can last for long. And I think you're seeing signs that the dollar wants to pick up. And I think that creates a bigger problem. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, no, I think interest rates are going higher. And I think we're going to have to adjust to that. I think if anybody's got credit card debt right now, I would advise them to pay that off as quickly as they possibly can. Stop using the credit cards, because I just feel like these interest rates are going to go up. And, you know, these credit card companies are going to be, I mean, they're going to be adding that on. So, you know, I think the housing market will probably suffer because of it. But we've had several years of kind of artificially low interest rates. So this feels like it's more market driven, like it's more natural. And I mean, it's going to, you know, it's going to cause some pain. It's going to slow some things down, but it's probably more market oriented than what we've been through.
No, and I agree. And I think that it should be. Look, the markets are always stronger when they do have a little pain, because it makes everybody run a better ship. And it actually leads to more money anyways when it's all said and done. I think that's one of the things that we forget about, is that, you know, it's good when markets go up and down. It's good when they trade. It's good when they really get true free markets and true price discovery versus an artificial, because I think one of the things, if you're a conspiracy theorist, you know, banks have not provided a lot of liquidity to the average lender or the average borrower, excuse me, over the last 8 years because the rates are too low and it doesn't make mathematical sense to them, right? Because if they can the full faith and credit for at 2%, let's say, and they can get, and they're going to have to lend it to me at 3, well, I'd give it to the government at 2 also. At least I know it's guaranteed. But my real question to you is, they've gotten, I think, spoiled a little bit because of their credit card debt, because, you know, obviously they get a much higher rate on credit card debt. And of course, we've got all this peer-to-peer lending now, which is much higher than the normal rate. So in your opinion, do you think that they're trying to, they don't mind having the credit cards and would prefer not to lend through the normal channels at original rates and let people continue to slap their credit cards? Because, you know, a lot of businesses use their credit cards every day, and they, if they need debt, they carry their debt on their credit card, which is never good. Even if it's a good rate, it's still twice what the rate should be.
Right. Yeah. No, I would imagine that the banks love the credit cards. I mean, I just think it's, you know, they know that, and I include myself in this, by the way. I'm not, like, you know, scolding anybody, but they know that we're weak. They know that we, you know, we want to go out and eat at that nice dinner and buy that cool new coat and do whatever it is, buy our kids this thing or that thing. I mean, we're very, and our whole society is that way. And it is maybe the hardest thing in the world to control that. Because not only are you depriving yourself of things that you want, but you're also kind of, you know, socially kind of outcast if you don't have the latest this or that, especially kids. So I think banks love credit cards. I think they're a problem. You know, I get why people want to spend on them, but I think we just got to balance it out a little bit more. You know, I've been trying to talk to my kids, like, before we go somewhere, even if it's like grocery store, the drugstore or something. And I'm like, guys, let's try to control our impulse buying and just go in and get what we want and not get any candy at the counter when we leave. I'm just trying to teach them the psychologicalness of trying to control spending. It doesn't make you any happier, but yet we still do it.
Well, we do it all the time. I mean, you know, it's easy. To, yeah, it's only, you know, it's only $20, only $50, only $30, whatever it is. And you only yourself into 20,000, right? And then, of course, if you can't pay the bill. Now, one of the things that I'm not a big fan of, and I'd like to get your opinion here. You know, I don't like all this, you know, zero down, same as 90 days, same as cash, you know, 1 year free financing, because really that's really more of a trap for the, because the smart people, you know, aren't going to take it anyways, because you have to pay a fee to get that. So to me, I think that's kind of a bad practice. And I think that creates a lot of this debt, because you get people buying things they can't afford with money they don't have. What are your thoughts?
Well, back to my original thing, you got to teach people about money. Well, a lot of those things, will charge you. So even if you're making payments for 6 months, say you get a year deal to buy whatever, a new big screen TV, and they will charge you interest on the whole thing. Even if you make payments in a timely manner, by the time that is up, and if it's not paid off, you get charged interest on the entire purchase, not on what's left over on the balance. So there's a lot of little tricks there. You know, there's been some talk about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and I mean, I'm not really a big government person. I don't like all these agencies, and it seems like we always create these things. But I think if we're not going to teach people in our schools about how money works, I think the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau actually could provide a good service.
I would hope they would, but you know, I'm not a big fan of those types of services because they never seem to do the right thing. You know,
I know, and I'm not totally either in general, but I do think, I mean, again, I mean, they may be the only thing out there for some people, you know, payday loans, I mean, all that kind of stuff. It's just disastrous for people. I don't think they realize. They kind of know instinctively, I shouldn't be getting this payday loan, but I have to, and I'll worry about it later. And then they get into a big mess. So I think kind of just teaching people ahead of time how to think through these things. I mean, it all starts with education. We're just not doing our job at financial literacy.
And you are one of the teachers of financial literacy. How's that going?
Going okay. So we're working on, the next one's going to be these two young singers wrote a book about millennials and saving money. So I'll let you know as soon as that one gets ready to come out. Should be in March.
Jane King, you are the best. Lila Max Media, the Kitching Report, thank you so much. It's always great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Tom.
And that was Jane King from Lila Max Media, the Kitching Report. And of course, this is the Bubba Show. And you know, you understand now, this is why we talk so much about financial education. Because the fact of the matter is that these kids today and people today are going to be the leaders of the future. And we need somebody at some point here to step up and say, enough, no more debt. And I think that is an issue that we need to address, and we need to address it rather quickly because it's only getting worse. And I think that's an issue and a problem that goes along with it. And, again, we need to monitor and cut down the amount of debt that we create, because it's not going to be good for us in the long run. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and of course, LibertyTalk.fm is my place. It's your only station you need, and you can download the show there every single day at LibertyTalk.fm. And of course, don't forget to get Bubba's Daily Update, which is available to you free at BubbaTrain.com. I go to the site and sign up for it, and it will be sent to you, emailed to you every day. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be back with Matt Demeter after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you, give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. It's time for Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com right here on the Bubba Show. What's up, Matt? Matt, we've got a lot of things going on. And of course, you believe that this space is probably headed a little bit lower, but I know you're a very bullish space. What's the big advantage you think of owning cryptocurrency right now?
Well, I still think it's early in the game. I think the big advantage is, what inning are we in, right? I mean, I think we're in the second inning at this point. I think, all these technologies, they go through certain phases. And, the first phase, you have the innovators, which supposedly is 2.5% of the population who gets involved early. Then you have early adopters, which are roughly, another 10%. And then I think that's probably happened. I think most of the early adopters are in now. And I think then it changes over to like the early mainstream. And I think that's about where we're about to go this year. I think finally by the end of last year, people started hearing about it on mainstream news over and over. Oh, Bitcoin's doing this, Bitcoin's doing that. And finally, because I remember back in the one time I actually was able to take a little time off. I went to a wedding of a friend of mine, and this was August. And only then I asked a few people if they'd even heard, have you heard of Bitcoin? And they're like, oh, yeah, they recognize the name or whatever. But they other than that, they knew no context for it. And I had a friend of mine from college who was there asking me, hey, Matt, what do you know about this internet money? Which I thought was still, it was kind of funny because, other people were still calling it, what's this internet money? And I think we're beyond that now. I think practically everybody, knows the name Bitcoin now. They know it exists. So that's great. But they still haven't bought. So, we're in this awareness stage, but I don't think we're in a participation stage yet. So the broad participation, I think, is beginning, is beginning now, essentially. So I think 2018 will be the year where people participate and a lot more money comes in.
Are all cryptos mined?
No.
Tell me about that.
So yeah, no, there's a, okay. So we've obviously talked about Ripple, and Ripple was not at all mined. Ripple was just what they called pre-mined. However many Ripple there are, I don't have the number in my head, but they just, they had that many from day one, and they, distributed some out to investors. They, you know, the idea was to distribute some to the banks because they wanted to be able to, you know, do partnerships with banks so that they would use it in to, as a replacement for the SWIFT system. But anyway, no, they're not all mined. And there's, and a lot of them are what they could say, just quote, pre-mined. It just means they just created them, you know, essentially from day one. And then they, you know, they put them up for, they put them on public markets. People can buy and sell. They still have block. Many of them have blockchains, but because there's no mining, the miners, what the miners do in Bitcoin is they validate all transactions and they get rewarded with new. That's how new Bitcoin come into existence. Is when they, when the miners do their job, they secure the whole network. They by securing the whole network and bundling all these transactions together, which is called a, each bundle of transactions is called a block. They'll add a block to this ongoing chain of blocks. That's why it's called blockchain. And for doing that, and for, you know, validating transactions and for the other things that they do, they get rewarded in the new, in the new Bitcoin that come into existence. And since they have to pay for overhead, you know, electricity and computing power and so forth, they are automatic sellers of Bitcoin. That they pay for all that stuff, so they sell, you know, more Bitcoin into the marketplace, and that's where new supply comes from. With the this pre-mine stuff, they just use different, they use different algorithms to determine, you know, where the next block should come from, like who should be responsible for that. And usually that's just somebody that has staked some of their crypto and said, you know, they're a holder, and they, I don't, I actually, getting into it is kind of detailed, so I don't want to get too, you know, deep in the woods on that, but it's just a different method. They're not all mined, but it still keeps the whole system secure. And I think that's the key point, is that you don't need to do mining to keep the blockchain secure.
Okay, so now we know Bitcoin is very expensive to mine, right?
Oh yeah.
So is there others that are less expensive to mine, or are they all relatively expensive? They all use a lot, I guess, a lot of electricity, right? That's the whole problem.
Yeah, supposedly Bitcoin mining takes as much energy, electricity, as Denmark in a year, in an annual basis. And those electrical costs, last time I took a look, and this is a while ago, this is now 3 months ago, and this, you know, stuff changes fast, but it was $1,200 of electricity. So they were still, so, you know, just looking at that and not all their other expenses, Bitcoin mining was actually pretty, you know, pretty profitable. Your margin would be, you know, your electrical cost, $1,200. Current Bitcoin price is $11,000. So, you know, you could do pretty well with that. But when Bitcoin was new, your laptop could mine Bitcoin. It had enough processing power to do that. So the algorithms get the proofs, the mathematical proofs that your computer would have to solve are become harder over time.
Okay.
So when you have a mining currency at the very beginning, it's actually there's very little cost to it, but it just goes up and up.
It's harder to mine, so it becomes more expensive to do so. And so when you're looking into the space, and you know, you're looking to possibly put in money, what percentage of a portfolio would you invest in the cryptocurrency world?
I'd say, you know, 3 to 5% of, you know, your net worth, I think would not be crazy. And I think I do more, I've done more than that, which I think is, you know, it just depends on your risk tolerance. It's like what they say, as you get older, you should do more bonds than stocks. I don't know if, you know, stocks and bonds are, you know, I'm having more concerns about stocks and bonds, but crypto is definitely more volatile. So I would only do 3 to 5%, but that 3 to 5% can make a massive difference in your overall returns.
Right. I mean, because look, I mean, if you'd have put 3% in Bitcoin, I mean, I'm only using the one that was obviously a lobster, but if you put it in there, it'd be worth obviously a lot of money right now. And that's one of the things about the Bitcoin world or the crypto world. I mean, you've mentioned some of these outstanding, crazy returns that come forward. But now, do you think that every portfolio should have some representation of a cryptocurrency?
Yeah, I do. And I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't dump it all into Bitcoin. I wouldn't, you know, dump it all into any one crypto. As you know, right now, I still like Ethereum better than Bitcoin.
Right.
So I'd spread it out. You know, I'd investigate the space. I'd find additional interesting ones. I think anything, most of the coins in the top 20 have some merit to them. And you could just do it that way. If you go to coinmarketcap.com, that would be a great way to do it. We're actually coming up with a service in the not too distant future, say in another few weeks, perhaps even 5-6. We'll see. But where we go over our crypto picks.
Right, and again, I think it makes sense. Look, I think that, you know, you should have some exposure to a lot of different asset classes, and I think you agree with that because that's just part of investing. Is not everything's going to be a no-brainer for sure winner, but neither are stocks necessarily, right? I mean, you know, it depends when you buy them. So if you're looking at value, you have to weigh this against your overall portfolio, and you should have some exposure because this could be, it may be nothing. You might lose 3%, but you could also get the big payday, right?
Absolutely. Like, you know, look, I'm not 2018 isn't necessarily going to be 2017. But if you had just taken a totally scattershot approach to in 2017 and you just invested in all 1500 coins, and there's all 1500, there's 1500 coins now. If you had invested $10 in each one, then, and you assume that all of them, just assume that all of them went to zero, with the exception of the best performer last year was a coin called Verge. And Verge went up 1.5 million%. So $64 turned into $1 million in Verge last year. So if you spent $10 into all 1,500 coins, that's $15,000. Your return on Verge alone would have been like, oh, you 200,000, something like that, if you put $10 in.
Tell me, Virgil. We got to go to a break, so, Virgil.
Yeah.
As we go to a break, this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, and make sure that you download the show every day at libertytalk.fm. And, of course, don't forget to get Bubba's Daily Update, which is available to you free. All you have to do is go to bubbatrading.com, and you can download that update. I'll email you that update every day. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break. Welcome back to the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with Matt Demeter of DemeterResearch.com. So, Matt, you know, I say, and you know, I've agreed on this in the past, but I think that Bitcoin is going to come to be more like a gold where it doesn't get so actively traded because it's just such a big thing. And you mentioned the fees are very expensive. Do I have any validity to that theory?
That Bitcoin will stay as sort of digital gold?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, right now, the thing that makes Bitcoin valuable in my mind is that when you have all these other coins that you can trade against, as a currency pair, Bitcoin is still acting like the dollar. Like you can go into any other, like in if you think of normal, you know, government currencies, fiat currencies, trading with the US dollar, you can buy anything, right? You can buy Norwegian krona, you can buy South African rand, you can do rupees, you can do whatever you want. So, you know, I should probably pick some smaller ones. Nigerian naira, for example, you could buy with US dollars. So that's kind of how Bitcoin retains value now, is that it has the most currency pairs that you can trade with. You can buy anything with Bitcoin in the crypto world. More and more, you can do the same thing with Ethereum. Ethereum is another, you know, is the number two crypto, and the number of trading pairs you have for Ethereum are catching up. So I think Bitcoin continues to act as digital gold, at least from that perspective, as a currency trading pair. But Ethereum's, you know, coming up behind it. So, you know, I think you could make the case for Ethereum for being also being digital gold, but Ethereum has other utility. So that's, you know, if I could only buy one, I would buy Ethereum over Bitcoin for that purpose.
Now, what's your take on the general markets right now? You know, equities, I know we know Bitcoin and stuff, but now how does that compare to the cryptos? But what's your take on the space? Now, you were looking for NASDAQ 8,000. It hit your within pennies of your first target and sold off. And, of course, we've had some pretty wild trading days. What do you think?
Yeah. That was my alternative top, the 7,500 area for NASDAQ. But I wasn't quite happy with what we got out of the NYSE. I thought that was going to go higher. I thought it was going to get up to 14,500 roughly for a top, which we didn't reach. So, that could have been a top. And when we roll over into this next bear market, it's going to be really bad. It's going to be really nasty. And I think worse than 2008. And so I don't want to be sticking around for that last, you know, that last push to the upside. But with that said, I would say there's a better than 50-50 chance that we actually do finally get up to that NASDAQ 8,000. We do, you know, make new highs. So we're trading it more from a short-term perspective. This is this latest bounce where we've, bounced off the February 9th lows. We started shorting last week, and most of the week we've, you know, sort of come a little bit lower. So, it's sort of worked, but I think if we just break a little bit higher, so in the NYC, if we break above 12,900, then it opens the door to going a lot higher, back up to new highs. So that's basically, we'll stay short here. 12,900 gets crossed, we cover those shorts.
Okay, so again, you're looking, and now, you know, gold has been in a real range now, you know, kind of, it's like, it looks to me like it's 1300 to 1365. I know you think 1400 is coming, or a little bit over 1400 is your target. Is that still your target, or has that changed at all?
No, it's still, it hasn't done anything yet to violate the idea that it's going to 1400, possibly 1420, really is what I think I'd like to see. It's a declining target. So, but it's still just above 1420. So, yeah, I'm still looking for that as a top. And I'm not long gold. The commercials have too big of a short position in gold for me to be interested right here. It's just too much risk. In other words, it's incomplete to the upside, but there's also downside targets we haven't hit that are incomplete as well. I think at this point we're going to go higher first. So I think we're going higher up to that 1400 level. Then we get a big sell off and we complete to the downside. But the way I'm playing it is silver is in a great position here. It's very near support. It hasn't quite necessarily completed to the downside, but the commercials have a fairly bullish position on in silver. They're always short, but they have a very small, very tiny short position in silver right now, and that's really the best you can hope for, is when they get close to neutral, and that's about where they are. So we're long silver, and that's how we're playing it. I think we'll get up into the 17s again in silver pretty soon. So,
I mean, that sounds good. And then, you know, oil has been kind of vicious, you know, the last couple of days. What's your look on oil here? I know it was a rising target last we talked, and you thought it might pop a little higher, although you're short, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're short. And we took some off, you know, during the plunge. Why is it sticking around? Why is it, you know, popping back up? It could be trying to get up to that target in the 68s. So I'm not ruling out. I'm still, you know, look, if we get this 68, I'm looking at 68.30. It's a rising target. If we get there, that's fine. We'll just, you know, the shorts that we covered, we'll put them back on.
We'll just sell more. Keep selling until they break. That's all you got to do, right?
That's right. No, well, yeah. The commercials, like we've talked about, never been more short oil than they are now. Particularly when it got up to, you know, above 65,
right.
They really just started layering stuff on. So, I mean, I don't see a whole lot, I don't see it staying above 65 for very long again.
Now, of course, you know, the commercials are short oil, which means, you know, they were long the VIX and they got out. They got that big move and they got out, right? And, of course, mm-hmm. they're short oil. And one of the things about the commercials, they can hold on a lot longer than most people can hold on. And they will. They'll continue to lay into them as a rule, won't they?
Yeah. No, they're not going to suddenly panic and cover. They'll just keep adding. They'll add more shorts and add more shorts. And a lot of these guys are also producers. They go into the commercial category. So these would be, like the Exxon Mobils and so forth. They'll be in their shorting. They know what their break evens are and so forth, and where they can lock in pretty good, margins. So yeah, just the higher we go, the more oil they'll sell forward in the futures market. And also the banks. They're just going to speculate in the stuff and they're heavily short. If we go back up to 68, they're going to layer on a bunch more. So, and they tend to get their way most of the time.
Oh yeah, because they can hold on. I mean, again, yeah. one, it's one thing to be able to hold, or to be nervous, right? So you have to be able to do that. And that's always the interesting part of this. Now, do you look at some of this stuff, like when you compare it to cryptocurrencies, right? I mean, it's a project that is ongoing, but the values are always strange. And of course, what determines value? We know what determines value in oil is like OPEC determines value right now, right? But how do we determine value in crypto, just through free market trading? Is that what you look at?
Yeah, crypto is probably the hardest to value. So I have to heavily fall back on technicals, because fundamentals are tough. But to get a sense, it's more of a sentiment play in cryptos right now. I think that it's going to change over time when new cryptos that act more like equities, when there are underlying businesses to the cryptos, and they offer a stream of like a portion of their revenues or profits, they pay to their owners, the owners of their coins. Then you're going to start looking. The crypto analysis will change. It'll start looking more like equities. The ones that act as currencies, that's like Bitcoin. That's a different ball. That's a different ball game. That's going to remain very difficult to analyze, but. That's why I just fall back on technicals.
Technical analysis.
And that sentiment, yeah.
That's DemeterResearch.com's Matt Demeter. And, of course, he is the king of technicals. He is our technical expert and the Bubba Show. And this is Crypto Invest. Matt always does a great job for us. So make sure you check out his site at DemeterResearch.com. In the meantime, that'll do it for today. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. And, of course, don't forget to download the show at LibertyTalk.fm and help us get to our goal of 1 million downloads a month. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station, right here at The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.